Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speaker will be Karen Wee. And she will be speaking on We Ask to Get Off. So, let's listen in on Karen Wee.
I come from Northfield, Minnesota, where I've lived for lots of years and worked at St. Olaf College, not as a teacher so much, but as a secretary in the art department. At St. Olaf, my husband does teach there. And somewhere 20 plus years ago, I began to write and have formed a writing group, have done it now for a long time, so every once in a while I get to teach students in the paracollege workshops. One real pleasure was teaching my own daughter there a few years ago, along with five other people, and that was lots of fun. My writing did not begin when I was young like you. It began when I was a young mother living in suburbia, going crazy with three children. And I came in one winter day after taking them in and out of their snow suits for about the third or fourth time in 45 minutes, and sat down and wrote this poem beginning to end that was all the things that I thought I was going to be. My father had promised me this, and my college education had promised me this, and the culture I lived in had promised me this, and this is what had happened. I ended up with a swing set plunged into the backyard dirt and a canary that I had buried beneath it. It was very dramatic. It was also quite angry, and I still like that poem. My head isn't in that place anymore. But I think anger is an authentic emotion to write out of. All of us hope we get through that and go on to something else, but it's an empowering emotion, and the thing that was especially good for me about all of that is David took one look at the poem and thought it was great too. Didn't feel indicted. I got support, and things just kind of went on from there. So that's my background in becoming a writer. It isn't something I felt in my life at age 6 and had to do at age 13 and was still at it at 21 and famous by 29, like Carolyn Forché, whom I've studied with. I think that probably the thing we all have in common is the language and what a gift it is. I mean, it's an incredible gift that we can speak and actually understand each other, and we take it for granted all the time. David has this joke that he makes about the people who speak in tongues, which also is, you know, a valuable thing, but it doesn't happen for most of us. And he said, I know people think that's magic and wonderful, but he said, for me, it's much more magical that you can actually speak and understand each other. So there's something to be said for that. Today I'm going to do a little bit of a similar rhythm to what I did in the workshop yesterday. What I see my role as is a good excuse for you, a reason for you, a cause for you to take an hour in your afternoon when you could be in the sun to come in and sit with a paper and a pencil in front of you and write. And I'm a kind of prompter. I see it as possibly a kind of meditation, and I think writing in your own life can be that way. If you can find a quiet place to withdraw to and put yourself in a place where the phone isn't ringing and people aren't interrupting you, and that you can be sort of all together with your thoughts, it's a real opportunity. And that is a gift we have to give ourselves, because if you wait for the opportunity to come along, it may not. You have to have some intention about it and cause it to happen, and that's exactly what you've done by coming here. First, I'm going to read to you a little bit, because sometimes the things that happen in your mind happen after you've been listening, and especially listening to words. I'm going to read another section out of a little pamphlet. It's a chapter by Annie Dillard from her Pilgrim at Tinker Creek on seeing. One of the things about writing is seeing things clearly, noticing detail, realizing how detail may reveal something about what's inside, either an object or yourself, or both. And she has this wonderful chapter on seeing. I read part of it yesterday, and I will again today. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about a woman whose books I admire named Natalie Goldberg. She's got two of them. This is her first and this is her second. One is called Writing Down the Bones and the other is called Wild Mind. And you can open these books to any page and she will have a suggestion for you to take off on writing. She's just terrific about that. So I'll do those two things first. Maybe one of the first things I should ask, there were what, three of you here from the other day? Three or four? Did you bring your travel sacks?
Yeah.
Did you add any words?
Yeah.
A few? This is what I suggest you do, and here are a couple big pieces of paper and some smaller ones. Draw yourself a sack, like a knapsack, a travel sack. And in this sack, in the next few days, or as you're sitting here, keep track of the words you love. Words that just have a sound that make you know that you like that word. It may be because of its meaning, it may be because of how it looks. I have words where I just like the look of the word. And so you can start writing. I took this home and I just had it sitting out on my desk, and so I wrote down samurai and David and horse and ox. And then I wrote this little phrase that I discovered years ago, if I'm doodling by the phone or something, all of a sudden it comes out of nowhere. It's always the same thing. Two words. Too much. And that is very, I haven't tried to explain it. It just happens. Probably because of the hectic culture we live in, it explains itself, but... Okay, now I'm going on with Annie Dillard, and just listen to what she has to say about seeing. I don't have other copies of these, I'm sorry I don't, but... It's all a matter of keeping my eyes open. Nature is like one of those line drawings of a tree that are puzzles for children. Can you find hidden in the leaves a duck, a house, a boy, a bucket, a zebra, a boot? Specialists can find the most incredible, well-hidden things. A book I read when I was young recommended an easy way to find caterpillars to rear. You simply found some fresh caterpillar dung. Look up, there's your caterpillar. More recently, an author advised me to set my mind at ease about those piles of cut stems on the ground in grassy fields. Field mice make them. They cut the grass down by degrees to reach the seeds at the head. It seems that when the grass is tightly packed, as in a field of ripe grain, the blade won't topple at a single cut through the stem. Instead, the cut stem simply drops down vertically, held in the crush of grain. So the mouse severs the bottom again and again, and the stem keeps dropping an inch at a time, and finally the head is low enough for the mouse to reach the seeds. Meanwhile, the mouse is positively littering the field with its little pile of cut stems into which, presumably, the author of the book I read stumbled. If I can't see these minutiae, I still try to keep my eyes open. I'm always on the lookout for antlion traps in sandy soil, monarch pupa near milkweed, skipper larvae in locust trees. These things are utterly common, and I've not seen one. I bang on hollow trees near water, but so far no flying squirrels have appeared. In flat country, I watch every sunset in hopes of seeing the green ray. The green ray is a seldom seen streak of light that rises from the sun like a spurting fountain at the moment of a sunset. It throbs in the sky for 2 seconds and it disappears. One more reason to keep my eyes open. A photography professor at the University of Florida just happened to see a bird die in flight. It jerked, died, dropped, and smashed on the ground near him. I squint at the wind because I read Stuart Edward White. I have always maintained, White says, that if you look closely enough, you could see the wind, the dim, hardly made out fine debris fleeing high in the air. White was an excellent observer and devoted an entire chapter of the mountains to the subject of seeing deer. As soon as you can forget the naturally obvious and construct an artificial obvious, you too will see deer, he says. But the artificial obvious is hard to see. My eyes account for less than 1% of the weight of my head. I'm bony, I'm dense, and I see what I expect. I once spent 3 minutes looking at a bullfrog that was so large I couldn't see it even through a dozen enthusiastic campers who were shouting directions, over there, over there. Finally, I said, what color am I looking for? And a fellow said, green. When I at last picked out the frog, I saw what painters are up against. The thing wasn't green at all. It was the color of wet hickory bark. So this author, Annie Dillard, is getting very precise. Everybody's saying it's a green frog, but she knows the color of hickory bark. So that's what she puts in there. So to continue to bring your ears along with me, I have here a rhyming dictionary. And just for the fun of it, to see what happens, I'm going to read to you a bunch of words that rhyme just over and over again. These are E sounds. And you just listen, and in your head, you'll start doing the same thing. E sounds with an ect, abject, affect, architect, bisect, circumspect, collect, confect, connect, correct, defect, deflect, deject, detect, dialect, direct, disinfect, disrespect, dissect, genuflect, inflect, perfect, pluperfect, recollect, reject, select, self-response, stage effect, stick insect, subject, suspect. Someone mentioned the music of the language. Some I sounds. I-N, a cluckin, adrenaline, a grin, a kin, Aladdin, all in, antitoxin, assassin, bare skin, bewitchin, Brahmin, chin, clothespin, creeping in, Darwin, feelin, fetchin, gelatin, hobgoblin, Jacobin, Jasmine, Lupin, Martin, Napkin, Ninepin, Odin, Oilskin, Redskin, Robin, Twin, Yin, Toxin, Twin, Underpin. Then we'll go to O sounds, Ot. All hot, a lot, apricot, ballot, Camelot, dry rot, forgot, hot spot, maggot, marmot, pilot, piping hot, pivot, Scott, shot, slingshot, snapshot, Tommy rot, touch me not, zealot, pilot, harlot, knot, pot, carrot, ergot, bow knot, buckshot, top knot. It really is the sound of our language, and in writing, whether it's poetry or prose, your writing is the music of our language. And that's why so many of us love to read, and why a lot of people write, and why you are moved by certain scriptures in church, by certain poets that you hear read. There is a music. Something in us gets touched by this magical thing called speech, called language. Now, like a good Zen practicer, you can take a paper and a pencil if you don't have any. I have some here. And the back sides are not so usable, but the top sides are all usable. And you can have as much or any of it as you want. But I'm going to have you, with this going on in your mind, I'm starting you with a sentence that says, I am a friend to, and I want them to be all inanimate objects, not people. I am a friend to, and you can make a list. You can go down the side of your paper. Yep, help yourself. You can go down your paper. In fact, I mentioned to others the other day, I have recent pages of poetry where my words follow each other down the paper. One there, one there, one there, and one there. I have four lines going down the paper. I am a friend to inanimate objects. Just go down the page. Things you love. These are really things you love, I think, if you are a friend to them. It can be something in your home, it can be something in your yard, it can be something here at Holden. I am a friend to things that you love.
What did you say to draw on?
That's another one. That's a knapsack. Just a big sack that you would put things in.
Oh, a knapsack.
Yeah, knapsack. That's all right.
I'm sorry.
Not here. I am a friend too. And just keep your list going. Don't even stop to think. Just write anything, the words that come. But when I was 21, I became a friend too. But when I was 21, I became a friend to more inanimate objects or anything that comes to your mind. Anything. Just fine. Anything that comes to your mind. Pens moving, your first thoughts are your most trusted ones, or sometimes the most dangerous. But when I was 21, I became a friend too. And now I am, and draw a line and write in your age. And now I am, and I am a special friend too. And continue.
And this is,
it doesn't have to be, whatever comes to mind. And in the next few seconds, I'll ask you to stop. But you certainly don't have to stop here when you go back to your room or wherever you like to write. In the next few minutes, I'll ask you to stop. Okay, that's good. You've been writing straight for about 15 minutes. And you haven't probably pulled your pen up off the page, and that's the way it should be. This is one of the things that you can do for yourself. It's a kind of timed exercise. Some teachers who do these workshops have a timer out here, and they'll say, now on this topic, we're going to go for 7 minutes, and on this topic, we're going to go for 15, and you put your pen to the paper, and you don't stop until the timer rings. And you'd be amazed. I mean, sometimes what stops us from writing is sitting there thinking about how we don't know what to write. And if you've got the timer going, you just do it. One day I was writing with a friend, and we had planned to go up to Minneapolis and use the sculpture garden near the Walker as our impetus, and it was pouring rain. So we never went anywhere. We sat in my dining room, and we watched the rain come down. We set the timer for 20 minutes, and we wrote, I remember rain, and we would write. And then we'd switch and say, I don't remember rain, and we would write. And I remember rain, and we would write. And I don't remember rain, and we would write. And it ended up that, you know, the poem I first wrote was rough. It wasn't really what I thought of as a poem. But I lived with it for a while and changed some things around, and I've published it. But it was just this decision, you know, that our plans had gotten botched, so we sat down and we did that. So I can really recommend timing yourself and putting yourself, William Stafford said, the only difference between me and anyone else as a writer or a non-writer is that every day I sit down at a desk and pick up a pen and pencil and write. But that's the only difference. So does anyone have anything you would like to share with us, to read to us about how this went? It's not a thing you have to do, but it's always...
I'm not going to read to you, but I thought that the 13 part was really hard. It was like dredging up. I mean, I'm thinking, oh no, I'm losing it. I'm losing what it was to be 13. I can't remember. I mean, it was difficult. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. I know. Mm-hmm. What is your 13? Would you want to do that? You can do any of it. Okay, anybody else have anything you want to read? Either a section of it or the whole thing? Okay, if not, we're going to go on to something else.
I'm going to give you a problem. I don't know if this will be really hard or really easy. It was one that when I did, it really surprised me. Now again, remember that you're thinking about detail, you're keeping your pen moving, you aren't editing and correcting yourself, because that's not part of this class. Because whatever comes, comes. So don't worry about punctuation, don't worry about spelling, just keep going, so don't worry about that. I want you to describe in as perfect a detail as you can the room, the place of your sexual awareness, your adolescence, when you suddenly began to know that you were doing, that you were who you were going to be. In your sexual identity moment, one of the fun ones that I've read along this topic was a woman who wrote when she was a little girl, she was in a drugstore in the lipstick department. And all of a sudden, and she wrote in great detail about what this drugstore was called. But it's that kind of thing, the place. You're not to write about the other stuff, just describe the place. The room, the outdoors, the car, the, who knows what. But the place of your awareness of yourself as a sexual person in the universe. And I'll give you about 6 minutes to do this. Exercises trying to free you up, to get you to realize that you can write anything. Natalie Goldberg says in here, don't worry about metaphors, don't think. First of all, do not be literary. Don't make your mind do anything. Simply step out of the way. Record your thoughts as they roll through you. Writing practice will soften your heart and mind. It will keep you flexible so that rigid distinctions between apples and milk, tigers and celery, disappear. We can step through moons right into bears. You will take leaps naturally if you follow your thoughts, because the mind takes great leaps, you know. Have you ever been able to stay with just one thought for very long? Another one arises. Your mind is leaping. Your writing will leap. But it will not be artificial. It will reflect the nature of your first thoughts. The way we see the world when we are free from prejudice and we can see underlying principles. We are all connected, she writes. Metaphor knows this, therefore it is religious. There is no separation between ants and elephants. all boundaries disappear in this kind of writing, as though we were looking through rain or squinting our eyes at city lights. So her process in this book, and what I'm trying to do here, is to try to just get you to kind of go for it. You know, have a pen and a paper in front of you, have a topic or an idea, and just see where it takes you, because you don't know ahead of time. Now on this last one, of a place, is there anyone who wants to read what they wrote? I know, we're a whole group of strangers here. Okay.
And I don't know, I can tell you after why. There was blue wallpaper there, sort of sky blue with a vertical white pattern like large feathers spaced every 6 inches or so. One door, one window, a rather narrow room, and we were changing the bed sheets, my mother and I. I was four. I don't remember the floor, but it was hardwood, and there were pictures. My cat named Thoreau, a painting my Uncle Jess had done, very good, too. A lovely old chair in the corner, dark wood with a pillow in it, needlepoint of my cat Daisy. My mother does needlepoint. The curtains were white Priscilla's, and the window was large. It looked up towards the lake where a rowboat bounced against the dock, tick, 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 as the waves lapped the shore.
Very nice. Very nice.
All a lie. Remember the blue wallpaper, that's it.
This is what we call poetic license.
I love that. It was really good. It was really good because when you gave us that, absolutely. And so the only thing that came in my head was that blue wallpaper. I've always remembered it. It's always kind of driven me crazy because I have this little memory of when I was born, this wallpaper, and I can't remember anything else. It's changing that bed and that wallpaper, and I just and I said, made it all up.
That's right. You can do that. When your memory fails you, make it up. And you know, we all have these memory lapses, so whenever your memory gives out, make it up. I have a piece that I wrote about my sister falling off the second story of our house. And she survived very well, remarkably, but a teddy bear ear went over the edge. And she, looking after it, went over the edge. We don't know exactly how or why. She was probably 3, and I think I was 5 and a half. And she missed a sidewalk, and she missed a big barrel of rainwater. And my mother went over the roof. I don't remember calling her. Maybe I did. She came out on the porch. She leapt to the garage. She leapt to the generator place. She had been nursing my young brother. And so I have this pink cream nightgown kind of following her. She got to the bottom, and Connie was playing in the sand. Well, in the piece I wrote about it, I wrote that I threw the teddy bear ear over. I didn't, but it just makes it a better story. But somewhere in family history, you know, this is going to come down and I'm going to be in trouble. But that's what you can do. Okay, anyone else have any paragraph? Okay.
It was a bedroom shared with my sister. It was upstairs. It had been a storage room and farmhouse, and in it was stored an incubator and unused items. And we slept there in the summertime. In the bed, we had a homemade patchwork quilt, carefully stitched in many designs and colors of threads. The floor was painted gray, white boards, and we had a crockery chamber pot.
Aha! Mm-hmm. And notice the sound of how she ended that quick sentence, "We had a crockery chamber pot." I mean, similar sounds in that, and it just, you know, it comes partly because you're thinking about language. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful. And I will be so free as to say, you know, the difference between poems and prose is pretty elusive sometimes. There are wonderful writers who string their lines all the way across the page and call it prose, and it's very, very beautiful poetic writing. There are poets who aren't very melodic at all. They put things, you know, 2 lines wide down the page like I was describing and call it poetry. But there are some of these things you can be rather arbitrary about, like these pieces you just wrote. If you want to try it, try making tercets, lines of 3. Just, you know, take your thing back to your room, put them in lines of 3. It may come out to be 9 lines long, it might be 10. You might have one dangling on the bottom, but just see what happens. And if it, you know, if it looks good and sounds good and you're happy with it, you've got a poem. And don't let anyone tell you different. Now, the thing that I'm going to leave you with, because I have to go change clothes and get into my closed-toed shoes, and Carolyn, if you wouldn't mind gathering these things up when you come, or just to pull them together for me.
Okay.
These are pictures that I cut out of magazines, and I want you to choose one of them. I'll just string them out along here, and you can look at them. Choose one of them and write a story about the picture. You can bring yourself into it if you want. You don't have to. If you want to make it a story that you're telling a child, like you might use, yesterday we were talking about using simple sentences, you know, see Dick run, watch this piece of action. You can do that. But you can have any kind of freedom, but pick a picture that you think that you can tell somebody else a story about. And I've got some that are actual photographs, and I've got lots that I cut out of magazines. And you can get up and walk around to look at these if you want. And if you get kind of stuck on one and you're not going anywhere and it's frustrating, just grab something different. But I will leave you with that, and I'll leave you with this extra paper too, so that just tell a story to someone. And if you're interested, I'll meet you back here at 6:15 tomorrow, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And remember your travel sack of love and words. You can carry that around with you.
It must be because you have those rhyming words. I found things coming out of mine.
Well, I wondered if that might happen. I don't write in rhymes very much either, but that's another thing. Robert Penn Warren said if you ever want to do a specific style, like a ballad or whatever, he said start reading only those, and your brain will start reading them. Read only the style that you're wanting to write in and do it for, a couple of days, and your head will start doing that.
Even things on my list are done.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was curious about whether that would happen. She said even things on her list started to rhyme.
I teach literacy and those cannot read. And you learn that the vowel sounds are so terribly important. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of rhyming. Mm-hmm. In order to get it over, you go over and over and over all these vowel sounds.
Yeah.
Pretty soon you just have
vowel sounds. Yeah. Well, good luck with that, and I'm sorry to leave you.
Thank you.
Okay. One, two, three, stop. One, two, three, stop. Does anyone have anything you'd like to read? Okay, go ahead and hold up your picture first.
Okay, I used the back of her picture. This is the picture.
Huh?
Okay. You know that feeling of excitement as you prepare your own room for the first day of school. Seventh graders, I thought, 12 years old, they're so young. I pictured myself reading to them, as my teaching mentor, Carlene, had recommended. Cherubic faces look up at me, enthralled at being given the gift of literature. I carefully pinned cheerful posters, "Let's read," smiles Garfield the cat, over contrasting backing paper. I even have a system of stacking baskets organized for my students to place completed assignments in. My first day of teaching, I threw out my container of yogurt in the gravel outside the portable and didn't touch yogurt again for nearly a year. Already the first day, those darling 12-year-olds were scheming to outwit me. That's as far as I got.
12-year-olds were scheming to outwit me. I got outwitted by that age group when I was teaching.
Oh, the reading aloud lasted for about 3 days.
The very bright ones really got me. Okay, anyone else? Anything?
Well, I wouldn't mind. I've lived a long time now. I picked up one at the cemeteries in the Arab Muslim country, and all the people and all the stones and so forth. Cemeteries. I looked at the picture of a cemetery in a Muslim country. People die and have to be buried there too. Families grieve too, and life must go on there too. Memorial Day, I went to the cemetery where my lover was buried. I will be there beside him someday. The future years become shorter as time flies by. A simple service was held. People were there too who grieved, some recently, others remembering long ago. Family history was there. Grandparents, aunts and uncles, and babies who never grew and lived as I had been perfect to live. Epitaphs are just dates and names on the stones. Cemeteries can be places of quiet beauty or military crosses in old concrete road. How much living to do is important before we join those already there, and someone will grieve for us.
Wonderful. You jumped from a foreign place, a different culture, different religious tradition to your own, and then a kind of universal. Very nice. Yeah. Anything else?
I'll leave mine if nobody else wants to. But I don't do that, so I don't have any idea.
That's all right, no editing.
I love the cherry tree out behind our home was a wonderful shade tree in summer. For some reason, it seemed to be the place my friend Colleen and I found that the most magic occurred between us. We were just simply the best, closest of friends back in those joyous, carefree days of young womanhood. It wasn't only that we shared each other's dreams and most intimate secrets. Our bond certainly transcended any terrestrial plane. Because we lived very nearby each other, we met through our mothers at a very early age. So early, in fact, that we couldn't then and can't now ever remember not knowing each other. Our mothers were pregnant with us when they met on the street one afternoon. Colleen's mother, Teresa, was walking Colleen's older brother, Joe, to Mr. Kendall's for ice cream. Joe was 3 1/2 and Mr. Kendall owned the drugstore with its most important asset, soda fountain. My mother, Angel, walked down with her and had a milkshake. She told me it was strawberries, so she would have a girl.
Nice. Oh, I'm reminded of that sort of biblical recognition too, the two pregnant mothers and the babes sort of recognize each other through. That's really, really fascinating. Well, I think that's wonderful. And please, you know, I don't want to scare you away, but on Friday afternoon, we're going to have a reading. And I hope that there are pieces from this class that, and you know, if you don't want to read it, come and listen to the rest of us, but it'll be on the board, and I hope you'll be there. It's just a casual sharing. I think readings are really important. As you can tell, when you listen to someone read here, it sort of piques your own imagination. It feeds your own energy to hear other people do this kind of thing. So the less shy we all are, the better it is for everybody. And I know that feeling of having to be shy. Thanks for coming.